Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us. Tonight, we're going to have a special edition of our candidate forum. And tonight, we're going to focus on the U.S. Senate race on the Republican side primary. The primary is May 8th, and it's approaching quickly. Tonight, we're going to have with us Jim Renacci. And Jim Renacci is running for the U.S. Senate. He is currently the congressman in Ohio's 16th Congressional District, but he is running for the U.S. Senate primary on the Republican side, to be followed by Mike Gibbons, who is a Cleveland businessman who also is running in the spring primary, the May 8th primary, for U.S. Senate. So again, we're going to be hearing first from Jim Renacci, followed by Mike Gibbons, and we hope that you'll enjoy tonight's program and we'll get much from it. This is the Ohio Christian Alliance. It does not endorse any political party or candidate, but we do provide educational candidate forums for the purposes of presenting this information to the public. We hope that you enjoy tonight's program. Tonight we have on the phone with us Congressman Jim Renacci, who will be running for the U.S. Senate in the primary. Of course, this year there are some contested races as we head into the primary season, and then, of course, the general election. And Ohio will have a battleground state race for the U.S. Senate, that is for sure. With us on the phone again is Jim Renacci. Again, he is the current congressman of the 16th District. And just recently, Jim was considering running for governor, but then he has a little story to tell us about what has happened as there was a shakeup in the Senate primary, and now he is running for the U.S. Senate. Jim, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Chris. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks, Jim, for joining us, and we appreciate you taking time. Let's talk about that a little bit, because this has been an interesting year for you, as you, of course, have served in the 16th Congressional District for 7.5 years now. And then, of course, you were considering running for governor for the state of Ohio, but something else happened along the way. Tell us a little bit about that.
For sure, Chris. Well, I think for your listeners, they first should know that I was in the business world for almost 3 decades. Moved to Ohio 35 years ago in February, started my first business, grew one business to 60 businesses, created over 1,500 jobs, and employed over 3,000 people. I was always a big believer in giving back to my community. I was a firefighter. I was on the Board of Zoning Appeals, the Planning Commission, all of those things. And really, national public service never was something that I was considering until one day my dealership was taken away from me. I had a General Motors dealership. In 2009, General Motors was taken over by the federal government. I called my congressman at the time because my dealership was selected to be closed. 53 employees were going to lose their job. I asked for help. He said he would give me help until the day that there was a vote on the House floor to reinstate my dealership. And then he voted against it. I ended up losing the dealership. I called him up, told him he lied to me. I was going to remove him from that office. I thought that was just a threat on basic business in Ohio. And 14 months later, I became the U.S. congressman. So I have been here just over 7 years and was coming back home, had decided that I could serve now that I had given up almost my entire business portfolio this last 7 years. I thought I could serve best as governor, because I do know our state is failing in many ways, and started a campaign for governor in March of last year, had gotten all throughout the state talking about the things I wanted to do for the state. And then on January 5th of this year, as many of you know, Josh Mandel announced he was stepping down from the Senate race. His wife, and again, my thoughts and prayers are to him and his family and his wife. With her illness. I got contacted by many people asking me to get in the race. I said that I had no interest. I was going to continue to run for governor. I told people that the only thing that could change my mind was a call from the president in the White House. And a few days later, I got a call to come see the president in the White House. We talked about this race. We talked about the importance of it. He asked me to get in. He wanted me to run against Sherrod Brown. And again, after some prayer and discussion with my wife, we jumped into the Senate race. So that's the reason I am now in the Senate race. I tell people, Chris, that sometimes leadership's not about what you want to do. It's about what you have to do. And this was a call from the president. This was a call to duty. And it was a call that I accepted. And again, I don't care if the president was Democrat or Republican. I do believe when you get a call from the president, you have to at least take the call and listen to his request. And that's what I did.
Okay, very good. Well, that's a great explanation of what has happened, because obviously it's been a little bit of a whirlwind for you. And now you're off and running, of course, in the U.S. Senate race. Let's talk about that for a little bit. And again, you've already covered some of this, but I guess the question is, as you're running for the U.S. Senate race, and let's go to the next question then. What, in your opinion, is the biggest problem in Washington right now?
Well, I say this is the problem in Washington and in politics all along. It's career politicians. Too often politicians worry about the next election, not the next generation. And they make their decisions based on worrying about getting reelected. The good thing for me was that I came here. I was able to come to Ohio as a poor kid from Western Pennsylvania, started my first business with just a few hundred dollars, lived the American dream, and now I'm able to give back to my state and to my country. Too many times politicians here in Washington come down here, they live here their entire career. That is their career. They need that paycheck, and they make decisions based on the next election, not the next generation. I've said all along, the best thing that I can bring to Washington is that I don't need the paycheck. This is not my profession. I am a businessman. I've been a businessman for almost three decades, and my only reason for coming here was because career politicians decided to take my Chevy dealership away from me. So that's the number one issue in any, whether it's state, federal, city. After being here for 7 years, we have to start realizing we can't continue to elect career politicians because they're worried about the next election, not the next generation.
We're talking with Jim Renacci, who is the current congressman of the 16th Congressional District, but is a candidate for the U.S. Senate race. The May 7th primary is coming up quickly, and then, of course, the general election later this year, and you will face off against Sherrod Brown, the winner of that primary. So if you do win the primary, Jim, and you face off against Sherrod Brown, what are your points of contention with Senator Sherrod Brown and his time in Washington?
Well, let's face it, Sherrod Brown has been in politics. He started in 1974. I was a sophomore in high school when Sherrod Brown first ran for election. He's been in elected office his entire life, except for 4 years when he was defeated in one election. But during those four years, he ran for Congress. So he is the epitome of a career politician, somebody who has lived his entire life since he was 18 years old in politics. The difference is that, and he'll say that he's an individual who's for the blue collar union voter. I am the blue collar union. I grew up in a blue collar union family. My father was a railroad worker. My mother was a nurse. I paid my way through college by working three jobs. And I'm going to make sure that the people of Ohio realize that. I understand what it is to work hard and do the right thing. I went to a small school because that's all I could afford. I was absolutely shocked when I looked at a little bit of Sherrod Brown's background. He's the son of a doctor. He went to Yale, and he's been in politics his entire life. I'm the son of a railroad worker. I went to IUP, Indiana University of Pennsylvania, paid my own way, and I've been in business my entire life. That will be the difference between Sherrod Brown and Jim Renacci. But the next question I'll always ask is, are you better off today? After all the years that Sherrod Brown has served in Ohio, which is almost 40 plus years, are you better off today than you were 10 years ago, 20 years ago, or 30 years ago? And I think the answer is Ohio is struggling, and a lot of it's because of the policies of these career politicians, including Sherrod Brown.
You know, that's a great point, Jim, you bring up, because Ohio does lag behind. So, for instance, right now, the economy is starting to get on the move nationally, and we can see wages rising. We can see companies investing across the country in various states, but yet Ohio is still lagging behind. It's even competing with some of its border states for businesses moving into them, but we still have some impediments here in Ohio. One of them, of course, is a tax structure. The other is we don't have right to work. And other states have right to work. Michigan, Indiana, West Virginia, and Kentucky. And, you know, analysts and economists say that in right to work states, people who were in the urban areas, they actually have higher wages, that there's jobs accessibility. So, what, you know, you look at Ohio and it's lagging behind, even currently right now, our the state treasury is behind on its receipts. And, you know, and unemployment numbers are ticking up here where they're going down across the country. What do you think from Washington, what you can do to actually help Ohio and its economic future?
Well, Chris, it's interesting because as I ran for governor, I got to know a lot about Ohio. But remember, the best lessons I've got in Ohio was being a businessman in Ohio for almost three decades. When I traveled Ohio, the best example I can give you is Procter & Gamble was moving 1,500 jobs from Cincinnati to West Virginia. And I met with them and asked them why they were leaving. They said, number one, the regulatory climate is bad in Ohio. Number two, the tax climate is bad in Ohio. Number three, the energy climate is bad in Ohio. Mm-hmm. And number four is right to work. So they brought up four issues, which I made the pillars of my governor's campaign, but those are also the pillars of what I can do in Washington. Let's face it, we were able to get a tax bill through that I supported, which is going to help Ohio businesses grow and prosper. Sherrod Brown did not vote for that. Regulatory bills, we passed a number of bills eliminating regulations for Ohio businesses. Sherrod Brown did not vote for those. When it comes to energy, I'm a big believer in all in the above, including our coal and our oil and gas in Ohio. So we need to remove those barriers, those federal barriers, so that our state can grow and prosper. And again, right to work, as you mentioned, I've said even as a governor, we have to look at that. We can't have every state around us right to work. Now, that's a state issue. But in the end, I do think it's the opportunity to make sure that we can compete with other states. And as a senator, I can help get the Trump agenda moving forward, which I think is important.
Well, that was my next question. What is the number one thing you would seek to do if elected to the U.S. Senate this November? If you win the primary and you win the November election, what is the number one thing that you want to do as Ohio's new U.S. Senator?
Well, the one thing I can tell you, Chris, is I have the best relationship out of all candidates with President Trump. Just last week, I flew into Cincinnati on Air Force One with President Trump. He's a big supporter of me. I was a big supporter of him. In Cincinnati, he said specifically he wants Jim Renacci to be the next senator. He wants Jim. He kept saying, get in there, Jim. We need you to win this race. We need you to beat Sherrod Brown. I will bring, as a senator, a relationship which we don't have with Ohio right now. The president does not have a very good relationship with Ohio because there's confrontation with our governor. Many of the statewide elected officials did not support President Trump when he was candidate Trump. Many of the congressional leaders did not support President Trump when he was candidate Trump. I did support candidate Trump during the Ohio primary, and I've supported him ever since. So I'm one more vote, but also one more voice for Ohio where I can actually speak. I've been to the White House at least six or seven times in the last 7 months, which is something I can't say for the time I was here when President Obama was here. But I can be a voice for Ohio at the White House and continue to help move the president's policies forward.
We're talking with Jim Renacci, who is a candidate for the U.S. Senate. The May 7th primary is coming up quickly, and the filing deadline just occurred, and so officially he is a candidate for the U.S. Senate. Jim, we're going to turn a corner here and talk some of the social issues that are concerned to many voters as well. Many candidates say that either pro-choice or pro-life. What is your position on the abortion issue?
Well, Chris, I have a record. In fact, I'm the only candidate in the primary and the general election that has a 100% pro-life record. I always use the words, I'm a faithful Catholic. There are a number of people who, you know, say they're a devout Catholic or they're a practicing Catholic. I think Nancy Pelosi has used that once. Vice President Biden has said, I'm a practicing Catholic. Nancy Pelosi said she's a devout Catholic. I'm sorry. I say I'm a faithful Catholic. And I have followed the Catholic doctrine. So I am 100% pro-life, but I'm the only one that has that record. In fact, one of the candidates in the Republican primary came out first in his first interview and said, I'm pro-choice. Now he has retracted that. But I'm the only one that not only has said it, I've lived it, I've voted it, and I have the record.
One of the things that Congress announced when they were starting off with the Trump administration is the pledge to defund Planned Parenthood. Where are we in the process, Jim, currently of defunding Planned Parenthood? There's been some disappointment along those lines. Some of it, of course, is tied to Obamacare. But where are we in the process of actually defunding Planned Parenthood?
Well, Chris, I can tell you that I've supported and voted for every defunding bill for Planned Parenthood. So I'm a 100%. I have a 100% record of the bills to defund Planned Parenthood, supporting those, and I'll continue to do that. I think the answer is that the best defense against Planned Parenthood is having the states change some laws so that they do not have to use federal dollars for Planned Parenthood. But at this stage, I can tell you that I can only speak for myself. I have a record of supporting the defunding of Planned Parenthood continuously while I've been down here in Washington.
Well, there's some breaking news this afternoon that President Trump releases budget defunding Planned Parenthood. So there's obviously an effort is underway in Washington to do just that. The president has said repeatedly and pledged the defunding of Planned Parenthood, which is, of course, the nation's largest number one abortion provider, which infuriates many Americans that tax dollars are going to fund Planned Parenthood. Turning a corner, let's talk about religious liberty. And specifically here in Ohio, there is House Bill 160. It's dubbed a LGBTQ rights bill, but what it would do was actually give special rights to lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer individuals, as LGBTQ indicates. What is your position on granting special rights to the LGBTQ community or individuals?
Well, look, I've always been a supporter of religious freedoms, will continue to be a supporter of religious freedoms, have fought for amendments for religious freedoms when some of these other rights have been brought to the table, because I believe we have to have the right of religious freedoms, and I'll continue to do that. I mean, again, whether it's here in Washington, you're always going to see me being a fighter for religious freedoms.
So specifically, when we see legislation like this in Ohio, which would grant, of course, special rights to a sexual behavior, in other words, in all estimations, but what, because it would be the Civil Rights Code, which would be public accommodation and housing and employment, you know, the supporters of the bill argue that there's some discrimination that exists, but your view as to, you know, there's religious folks are saying, hey, this would actually be an affront to me, what I believe, pertaining to the genders you know, that your gender is by birth. So what is your view on that? Because we're seeing, you know, certainly on the national level with the Trump administration, a rollback of the very aggressive, you know, homosexual and lesbian agenda under the Obama administration. But yet we see sometimes on the local level, the municipalities in the states, these bills, actually, this was getting a lot of noise because one of the big, I think it was Amazon, was considering coming to Ohio and still is. But the homosexual activists were saying, well, if it's not a homosexual or gay-friendly environment, the company shouldn't come if they don't pass this special rights bill. Your thoughts on that?
Well, what I've said all along, again, is that I have the Catholic I'm a faithful Catholic. I believe marriage is between a man and a woman. I'm a big supporter of religious freedoms. I signed the amicus brief down here when it came to transgender bathrooms, against transgender bathrooms. I was a supporter of amendment against transgender bathrooms. So again, you just have to look at my record, and you'll see in my record that I've always been pro-religious freedom, and I'll continue to do that.
Very good. We're talking with Jim Renacci, again, a candidate for U.S. Senate. He is the current congressman of the 16th Congressional District. Jim, some final thoughts then for your candidacy for the U.S. Senate. Obviously, you've laid out some very specific things that you want to see do. What are some other thoughts as you campaign for this office for Ohio?
Well, for your listeners, I want them to know that not only have I gotten the endorsement from every member of the Ohio delegation, including Senator Portman and Jim Jordan, but I've been endorsed across the state by the state and local parties, including last week I was endorsed by the Ohio Republican Party. But here's the most important thing. I've actually run two very difficult elections. I told you I entered the national political world because somebody took something away from me. I didn't have to run. I was a businessman. I stepped up because I didn't trust the individual who was running, and I won. 2 years later, I was redistricted into a very difficult race again, over $15 million spent in that race. And by the way, $15 million spent in the first race, which is unheard of in congressional races, and I won that second race. I would tell your listeners that I'm the only one who not only is 100% pro-life, not only fights for religious freedoms, not only believes, but also can say that I have won two very difficult fights against incumbent Democrats two cycles in a row. So I am also not only a fighter, but I'm a tested fighter. And I look forward to being the representative, the winner of the primary, and go forward and beat Sherrod Brown, who is a career politician who needs to be removed. He's a liberal. He's one of the three most liberal senators in the country. Ohio is not that liberal. I'm going to make sure that the people of Ohio understand that, and I want to have the opportunity to remove Sherrod Brown from that Senate seat.
Very good. Well, Jim, thank you for taking time to join us on our candidate spotlight today, and we wish you well in your endeavor for the candidacy. We're talking with Congressman Jim Renacci, who is the candidate for the U.S. Senate race. The May 7th primary is coming quickly. Jim, how can folks log on to find out more about your campaign? Where's your website?
JimRenacci.com. That's JimRenacci.com. And they'll be able to get onto my website.
Very good. Thank you so much for joining us today, Jim.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you. Well, God bless. And again, folks, if you've missed any of this first part of our interview, please go to our website at ohioca.org or just Google Ohio Christian Alliance, and there you'll be able to hear the interview in its entirety. We also will feature other candidates as well that we'll be having in a series that are running for office in the May primary. And then later in the year, of course, as the general election approaches. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back on the other side. Don't go away. We'll be right back after these messages.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
I'm Johnette Cruz, and I'm a busy mom. Then a friend told me about TrustBlueReview.com, a new website powered by the Christian Blue Network. She uses it to find trusted Christian-owned businesses. I checked it out, read the helpful reviews, and found a great family dentist. Now I use TrustBlueReview for all my family's needs. For peace of mind, do what I did. Visit TrustBlueReview.com or download their free mobile app from your app store today.
The trusted source for all you do. Trust Blue Review.
Will my kids like this dentist? Can I trust this mechanic? Who's a good choice for my upcoming remodel? I found businesses I can trust from TrustBlueReview.com.
This company rebuilt our deck and renovated our bathroom. I'd highly recommend them to anyone looking to hire an honest contractor.
The best dentist experience I've ever had.
It's now easy to find trusted businesses in my community that have the same Christian values as my family. It all starts at TrustBlueReview.com or download their app in the App Store today.
The trusted source for all you do. Trust Blue Review.
Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And good evening and welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us. We're actually going to start our candidate forum series on tonight's program, and we're glad that you've stayed tuned because tonight we're going to focus on the U.S. Senate campaign race here in Ohio on the Republican side, and we're going to get to our guest in just a minute. But, of course, this week, early February, is the filing deadline. So the candidates are off and running for the May primary, which will be Tuesday, May 1st, and there will be a number of contested races, both on the Democrat and Republican side. I do want to say that our position as an organization, as we are nonpartisan, we do not endorse political parties or candidates, but we provide helpful information, such as our scorecards, candidate forms, our educational voter guides, and, of course, voter registration efforts. I want to say that the Ohio Christian Alliance is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to promoting Judeo-Christian values in American government, and the Ohio Christian Alliance does not endorse any particular candidate or political party, but we do provide this information to you for educational purposes. In other words, we report and you decide, you the Ohio voter. Well, with that, let's get to our special guest tonight. Well, there is going to be a primary on the Republican side for the U.S. Senate. That is the current seat held by U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown. It will be a contested race in November. And on the Republican side, the filings were confirmed this week. But one of the filings is Mike Gibbons, who is a local businessman from the Northeast Ohio area. And Mike is a candidate for the U.S. Senate race. Mike, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Well, thank you for taking time out to join us. I know that you've been crisscrossing the state, meeting with a lot of groups and you know, small, actually patriotic groups across the state and community groups. And people have told me that they have enjoyed engaging with you.
Well, that's good to hear. I've met a lot of great people across the state. It's been my wife usually accompanies me on these trips, and we both met some great people, and it kind of energizes me to talk to these people because you know, when you live in Cuyahoga County, you get a little jaded, I think, and the state is made up of a lot of just regular Americans that care about their country and care about their state.
Well, with that, let's talk a little bit about that. Why are you running for the U.S. Senate seat?
Well, I if you would have asked me that 2 years ago, I would have said there's no possibility that I would ever do that. And it was a long, hard decision. I had you know, I'm my personal life is a little easier to deal with something like this right now. We're my last son graduated from college last May, and you know, so I've been freed up. I don't have Saturday afternoon football games to go to, and the kind of requirements that that a parent always has. And I had been involved in the Trump campaign. I was co-chair of his fundraising in Ohio, and had met a lot of those people there, and started thinking about, you know, the possibility of maybe running for office at some point. And I think what really triggered it, I've got five kids and five grandkids, and my second youngest son, who graduated from college a few years ago, he graduated from Georgia Tech with a degree in aerospace engineering. And he graduated with honors, and that's a pretty tough engineering program. And he had a lot of opportunity to go out and make a good living. And rather than going out and pursuing the American dream, he pursued a different dream. He wanted to be a naval aviator, and he joined the Navy and was commissioned a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, and has been in training in Pensacola now. And he's going to be winged as a naval aviator this Friday. And my wife and I are going to be down to Pensacola to watch that. We wouldn't miss it. And anyway, we had visited Ryan early in his time down in Pensacola, and I was really kind of struck by the sacrifice he's making, and he's giving 10 years of his life to the service of our country. And although I consider myself very patriotic, and I've built a number of businesses over the years, started a number of businesses, and created a lot of jobs, I've never really served our country directly. And you know, my father was a high school teacher and a wrestling coach, and our family was about athletics. And you know, in fact, he was a little suspicious of me because I did pretty well in school, and he wanted to make sure I got enough sports in. And he never once asked me about what was on my report card. He just asked me what happened at practice. So I kind of knew where his interests were. But military was never really part of our family. We didn't have any relatives that were in the military. I didn't have any grandfathers or uncles or anybody that was in the military. And it just never occurred to me as at that age. And when my son did that, I was kind of almost embarrassed that I'd never pursued anything where it was a direct contribution to this great country we live in. And I said to myself, where could a guy that started out with nothing as I did end up in the position I am in right now, but for the fact I live in this great country? And so I came back from visiting Ryan down in Pensacola and made a few phone calls. I'd been involved, as I said, in the Trump campaign, and a lot of those people that were in the campaign were involved in the transition team. And I went to Washington and interviewed. I interviewed in three departments, HHS, SBA, and Department of Commerce, and ended up being offered a job in the SBA, somewhere between an assistant secretary and a deputy secretary. It's called Head of Office of Advocacy. And I was offered, and I was one of the three finalists for Deputy Secretary of Commerce, which I don't think they've even chosen yet. Apparently, a lot of people are having the same problem I had. But the problem was that I could not wrap up all the business interests I had and the potential conflicts I had in time for a Senate confirmation hearing, which at that point I understood was about 90 days. And you know, was disappointed, came back, and from Washington, and just said, you know, I really can't do that. And people started to encourage me to run for office. And I said, you know, if you want to do something for the country, run against Sherrod Brown, because we don't believe he reflects the ideology and the beliefs of Ohioans. And I truly believe that. And that's why I'm doing it.
Well, you were born and raised right here in Northeast Ohio. Actually, I believe that St. Ignatius was your alma mater as a high school. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I was born in Cleveland and down on West 77th, and then we moved to Parma. And I lived in Parma until I was in graduate school, really. And, you know, my mom, we had one person that was particularly successful in our family. It was my mom's great uncle, and he was a St. Ignatius graduate, and he became a lawyer. And it became her target for me going to school. My father was a teacher at John Marshall High School. And if you remember back then, Chris, there was the West Senate and the East Senate, and we would play games, football, wrestling, basketball against John Marshall. So my father wasn't really happy about me going there, and never wore anything blue and gold until my sons went there. But he gave in, and my mother won the battle, and I ended up at Ignatius. I loved it. It was a great 4 years. I think they teach you a lot of things. They teach you, you know, the values that are still with me.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you for sharing a little bit of your background. Tell us about your business career, because I know that's a big part of your quest and how you help others. In fact, I'd like to ask you about the group that you're investing in with opiate addiction recovery.
Sure, of course. I went to Kenyon College, got a degree in political science and economics, which frankly doesn't train you to do, you know, much. You know, it's a rigorous academic program, but you don't really know how to do anything. And so I went on to and got a business degree at Case Western. I got an MBA, the MBA equivalent's called an MSM. At the time, that's all I had. And it took me a couple of years to do, but I got an internship while I was there, and it effectively paid some of that tuition I got for free. And it was with an investment banking firm called McDonald and Company here in Cleveland. And it was a great place. It was a partnership, and I fell in love with it. But apparently they liked me enough because they offered me a job. And I had intended to leave business school and go to law school. And I had to figure out how I was going to pay for that, because at the time I couldn't figure out how to get a scholarship. So I went to McDonald and Company, began working there, and went to Knight Law School and graduated from law school. It took me a while, but I got out. Never practiced law, never took the bar, but it helped me a great deal in my career. Ultimately, I left McDonald, had a short stint with another firm for 4 years in Houston, where I commuted every week pretty much. Actually, I was assistant coach to my daughter's soccer team while I was in Houston. And it never really moved my mind or my body or my family to Houston. And I wanted to get back. And I had the opportunity. I had a friend that was a very wealthy guy. And he said, let's start a business here in Cleveland doing what you know how to do. And we were going to start a private equity fund. And my partner's name was Brown. And unfortunately, he was killed about a month and a half after we started the firm. So I was willing to start a new business, but I really had quite an advantage in that I had a wealthy partner that could make sure that I had a salary because I had a family and I had to support him. Well, that all ended a month and a half after we started the firm, and I became a true entrepreneur, and with a desk and a phone, started a business that has now grown considerably and is one of the leading middle market investment banks in the country, headquartered right here in Cleveland. And we've got offices around the country. Our largest office is in Chicago now, largely because it's easier to hire people. But I wanted to stay here. I love Ohio. I like, you know, where I grew up, and it's worked out great. And as we did well on the investment banking side, I invested in other businesses. I've owned a number of them over the years. And you mentioned the addiction clinic. It was kind of a spinoff of a home health care business that I had started with two women that were knowledgeable in that industry. And we hired a woman. When Obamacare came in, the home health care business suffered, and we needed a turnaround specialist. I brought a turnaround specialist in. She said, I'll do this job, but if I do it, you've got to promise to support the opening of a new kind of a treatment for opioid addicts. And I was anxious to do that. I realized, you know, what opioids were doing to our state and our country for that matter. And I've lived up to that commitment, and we've had great success. We've had substantial In fact, Chris, the problem is it sounds too good to be true, but we're achieving 85% success rates with hardcore opioid addicts.
That's incredible because, you know, our Attorney General, Mike DeWine, has put together a coalition of faith and community groups around the state to address the opiate addiction and the crisis really as it is in our communities across the state. He's done that for a number of years now, and he's looking for groups and treatment centers that are having high success rate. And I know that you have mentioned this to the Attorney General. So that's fabulous.
Yes, I've had dinner with the Attorney General. He's he's on it. And we have a woman that we work with that is his outreach person for the addiction crisis, and she's very excited about what we're doing. And we started out giving people intravenous feedings of a coenzyme called NAD. And I won't get into the science, but it's as simple as this. NAD levels, which are in all of our bodies, become reach very low levels when you have an addiction or alcoholism for that matter, and we feed their bodies with IVs with large amounts of NAD. We also have some things we've got provisional patents on, and the results are that the cravings are not just substantially reduced, but eliminated in most cases. And we've now developed another kind of patented solution using NAD in a powder form, and we now don't have to use an IV, which is, a lot of people didn't want to go through because it's 5 to 7 days of just having an IV needle in your arm. But now they're drinking it, and we're achieving even better results. One of the great things about it is we can go through detoxification with a patient, and they won't even know they're going through it. And normally it's a brutal period where, you know, you have the worst flu you could ever possibly imagine for as much as 10 days. And we'll take people through this NAD process. And after 3 days, they'll say, I have no cravings, and they want to leave. And we say, no, you got to keep going. And, obviously we have physicians and nurses and people that can monitor them and take their vitals as they go along. But we've had no real incidents or problems. NAD has been around for a long time, but it's never been used the way we're using it. And we've attached a typical therapeutic program to it, where if you've taken heroin for 10 years, you have more problems than just taking heroin. And we try to work those things out with these people, and it's worked very well.
Well, we're talking with Mike Gibbons, who is a candidate for U.S. Senate. He'll be on the primary ballot. There will be a challenge on the Republican side, and we're going to give equal opportunity to Mr. Renacci, who will be coming on the program in the next few weeks. Mike, I want to turn the corner here and ask you some questions specifically of position issues along social issues. As the Ohio Christian Alliance is a social issue organization, we're pro-life, we're pro-family. Let's talk a minute about religious liberty, because over the last few years of the Obama administration, with, of course, the Supreme Court's acknowledgement of homosexual marriage, and then the policies of the Obama administration, the Justice Department under Eric Holder actually doing away with the Defense of Marriage Act, and then a lot of churches saw it as open season on the church and on religious liberty. What is your position on, so for instance, in Ohio, there's a bill at the Ohio State House, LGBTQ rights bill is what they call it. It would carve out special rights for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and what they call the term queer individuals. Actually, it's a little ambiguous as to the sexual orientation or identity as to what these protections would be, but many see it as a challenge to people of faith and conscience. It would affect individuals, businesses, and churches. What is your position on that?
Well, I'm kind of a guy that wants to let everybody do what they want to do if they're not hurting me. I'm Roman Catholic. I believe in what I learned all those years. I went to Catholic grade school, went to Catholic high school. But I think to a great degree, the Republican Party, which was is largely stood opposed to a lot of this recognition of non-traditional marriage and whatnot, I think we kind of blew it. I think I would have been just fine with civil unions and giving people that of the same sex that wanted to live together the rights that they would enjoy as a married couple. But I don't think you can change 25,000 years of human history with a law. It makes no sense to me. I'm not sure of the implications for the family long term. You know, there's a lot of studies out there, but I think it's, you know, it's unfortunate. I don't think we really know the costs of what we're doing right now, or what we're being told we have to do, I guess is the best way to put it. And, you know, and I still have trouble with the idea that after 25,000 years, we're going to change the definition of traditional marriage. So, I, you know, we have laws in place and we have to live with them. But just as, you know, we've had lots of laws that have been changed. You know, I stand for traditional ideas of marriage and, you know, and gender recognition. And I see no reason to change that. With that said, I would never discriminate against anybody. And I don't think that we need to call attention to what people are doing in their bedroom and establish a whole new set of rights because they claim to be doing different things than the bulk of society. So it's, you know, it's difficult to formulate a plan that could change all this. A lot of it depends on public opinion, but I know what my opinion is.
Many candidates, when they come to speak about the issue of abortion, for instance, they'll either say, I'm pro-choice or I'm pro-life. What would you say that your position is?
Well, if I'm giving a speech, I say I'm pro-life without exception. And you know, I was cautioned about that when I first started out. You know, I wasn't a politician. I'm not a politician. And I told my wife, the minute I start acting like a politician, I'm going to drop from this campaign. I don't particularly like it. A lot of what they seem to behave like and stand for. But I, you know, if you're a politician, you just throw out sound bites. And saying you're pro-life without exception means something to a lot of people in code, particularly people that have been involved with Right to Life. I've always had a difficulty in distinguishing between a child that's conceived in rape and incest from any other child that we're trying to save. And I was told that, you know, I have to say, I believe in, you know, abortion only in the case of rape or incest or the health of the mother. And I know enough to know that the health of the mother is a code for an awful broad treatment of that. But I prefer pro-life without exception because that's what I believe. And that's what I'm going to continue to say.
There's a bill currently before Congress. It's called the heartbeat bill. When a heartbeat is detected, yes, it would ban abortion at that moment. Would you support that legislation if you were called to vote on that?
I would. I would support it. And I'll tell you why I would. I would because I believe generally people believe that if a child's got a heartbeat, it's a living being. Now, I would do a lot more than that. The problem is we have Roe v. Wade. And, you know, it brings me to a conversation I had with David Osteen. You know, drugs are illegal, yet a lot of people are using drugs. And we can make abortions illegal and people will still do abortions. And I truly believe, and David Osteen is the president of National Right to Life. And we had a couple hour conversation. He really clarified a lot in my mind for me. And he said, Mike, we need to win this battle by winning hearts and minds, and we're winning. And I knew that. Abortions have been declining over the last decade, and it's wonderful to see.
Well, Mike, we've run out of time. Yes. Mike, Gibbons, who's running for U.S. Senate in the Republican primary on May 1st. If you want to learn more about his positions, you can go to his website. What is your website, Mike?
It's GibbonsForOhio.com, and boy, did that time go fast.
It sure did. Mike, thanks for coming on the program today, and we really appreciate hearing some of your views, and there'll be other opportunities
come back
for you as well.
Great.
Thank you. God
great
bless.
Talking to you, Chris. Thank you. Bye.
And if you missed any of today's program, you can hear the remainder of it on our website at ohioca.org.
You have been listening to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. To learn more about the issues that matter most to you and your family, visit online at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. Thank you for listening. This program is sponsored by the Ohio Christian Alliance of Akron, Ohio.